Welcome to Two Lit Mamas, a kidlit podcast for parents, teachers, and writers, and anyone who loves children's books. I'm Heather Kaufman Peters. I'm the mother of one adult son, a preschool teacher, and a writer.
And I'm Margie Ozimet, mom to two boys, middle school teacher, former homeschooler, and writer. Welcome to episode 71, the episode in which we chat about our favorite topic, food. Oh, isn't it though? Unfortunately.
Yes. I know we've talked about books with kid cooks and bakers before, but it's kind of fun to revisit this topic for foodies. I liked it. It was fun.
I think there's a lot of books like that for kids now, though, because kids, I mean, my kids do. My kids are really into cooking.
Oh, yes. My son was really into it, too, especially at that age, because he could kind of just, like middle school age, he could just tinker in the kitchen and make stuff. He used to make up recipes and I'd have to try them. It was kind of fun.
My oldest, he's trying to master the macaron.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
And he's good. They are good. He's doing well. But I mean, my God, first of all, this is an expensive habit. And this is a really, really extensive habit. It takes a lot of time.
You have to keep trying to make them. Yes.
Well, yeah. It just like it's the process takes a long time. Yes, and then in the end, you get like six.
I know. My sister and I made them one time and it was interesting process, but they didn't. They turned out okay, but they weren't perfect or beautiful.
His or pretty good, not beautiful yet, but they really are. You can't get the foot on them quite right. But I think it's also the weather hasn't been like,
sure.
You know, you have to have everything just right. So, and then he's the one who's also like, you know, a tiny, skinny rail who doesn't eat anything. So I'm like, I do not need this.
I know, right? I stop making cookies.
Why are you making all these things?
I'm not a great cook, but my favorite thing to do is bake. And I love to make pies, but it's like, we can't eat them. Like
right?
You're a baker. What do? Do you just waste food because you enjoy doing it? And it's a hobby. And then
you hand it to your neighbors.
Well, I know, but even my neighbors are like, okay, come on. We can't eat all this stuff.
I just made a cheesecake and I thought, oh, cause like the best way to make a cheesecake is an Instant Pot.
Oh.
And I've mastered that like years ago because it's water pressure. And so therefore it doesn't crack and everything. Makes a really nice little cheesecake and it's small. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. I made it for Father's Day. And I literally like, it wasn't, I said, you guys can cut the cheesecake. I came back downstairs and it was gone.
Now that's a problem too, when you don't even get one piece, right? Like a little slice.
I might need to make them bigger next time.
That's funny.
Or take mine before I leave. Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like because most of the people I know are like over the age of 50 and don't want desserts so much anymore. But I feel like I need to find like a young family and start baking for them.
Here's my baked goods. Can I give you my baked goods?
Can I just give them to you? Oh my gosh, that reminds me of that meme you sent me.
It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. Do you want to share it? This is not a visual medium, so you'll have to read it aloud.
I know, sadly. Let's see if I can find it now that I say that. It was so funny. Okay, so Margie sent me this meme that says, there must be a name for the phenomenon of Gen X folk who spent time with the Depression-era grandparents and are becoming just like them. Visit me and you will walk out with pieces of fruit, a plant cutting, a popsicle, or candle holders that you randomly complimented. And it's like, so me. I love it.
It is so true.
And Margie also added, and know how to do all these practical things no one else does, like gardening, sewing, baking. I'm like, yes.
It is so true. Pie making is like literally one of them. Grandma McCarty, God rest her soul. I mean, Grandma McCarty taught me how to make the best pies.
Yes.
Of course, we also use lard. So maybe that wasn't the best. And there is a history of heart problems on that side of the family. But gardening, all these ridiculous, how to identify all these kind of weeds and stuff. Even my husband will be like, why do you know these things? And I'm like, Grandma McCarty.
Oh,
Grandma McCarty was on it.
And all like the wildflowers that grow, native plants, you know. Yep. I learned all that from one of my grandmothers. Both of my mom and my grandma make like really good pie crusts. So when in my early 20s, like who does this in their early 20s? I was like on a mission to find my own pie crust recipe that was like on par with theirs. And
That was flaky and didn't use like Crisco.
Yeah.
Back in the day when everyone used Crisco for their flaky pies.
Yes.
I don't know what it is. Like old age makes you start to learn more about your generation or something. And we really are like a very weird, small generation.
Yeah, because I mean, the greatest generation or whatever they were called of our grandparents, they had a huge influence on us, I think.
They did, definitely. I was reading something about like, no wonder Gen X just wants to be left alone. We literally were the first latchkey kids. We really spent our whole life alone. And I'm like, that is so true because we really do. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. You boomers and millennials, you fight it out. You complain about things. Just let us sit here. Just leave us, give us some wine. And it also said, it was like the one that was yesterday, I was reading something like Gen X was the only generation that was 30 when they are 10 and is still 30 now that they are 50.
That's
and
I'm right. Like,
that tracks. That tracks. We literally just froze. Just froze. We have been 30 for 40 years and we're fine with that.
That's actually very accurate. I like it because sometimes I'm shocked by my age. I don't feel, but when I was younger, I always felt a lot older. You know, like when I was a teenager.
Yeah, same. Uh-huh. I was like, God, I'm so much older than these people. But you see people, you're, God, they're so old. And then you realize you went to high school with them.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
What?
The worst was when there was a kid who was actually a couple years younger than me. And he had like that, the coach's body. Remember when you're a kid and the coach, the middle-aged guy. Yeah.
With this short polyester tight shorts with a snap on the front. We all know what they were.
And balding a little bit, you know, and I saw this guy and he was coaching. I was like, oh my God, he is the coach. He has the coach bod and he's younger than I am. I'm like, oh no.
It is. I think it's harder on men. They go faster. My husband always is making comments about like, that guy is so old. And I'm like, that guy is your age. Literally. And he has no idea. Like my husband's a silver fox.
Uh-huh. So is mine.
But he doesn't realize he's a silver fox until he sees a picture. And he's like, who is this old guy? And I'm like, that's literally what your hair is. Your hair is salt and pepper, more salt and pepper. You are a silver fox. And he's like, well, it sounds better when you say it than when I look in that picture. I like when you say silver fox. When I look at the picture, I see old guy.
It's hard.
It's hard to admit. So.
Aww.
Oh. Anywho, I have done nothing but sit at soccer games because now, even though things are done, my son was reffing the South Shore, Massachusetts tournament all weekend. So someone had to drive him there and then sit in the car. I did walk a lot. I walked a lot until like Saturday, it just rained the whole time. And I'm like, I'm done.
What do you do? Sit in the car when it's raining or do you sit in the rain?
I watch the game sometimes because, what am I going to do? I mean, he's got like three games. I'm sitting there for like 3.5 hours, 4 hours.
That's some good writing time.
It is, but my battery doesn't last that long.
Oh, sure.
Mental or computer. So I read a book. I walk a lot and soon I'll have my dog. I can take my dog walking with me while I sit there. But I was listening to the Vampire Murder Club. So I'm really the other night when you said, I'm like, it's so good that you said that to me because I'm like, oh, I'll download this. And then I walked and I kept walking and walking and walking because it was fun and I wanted to see what happened. So
you're doing the Vampire Knitting Club, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm telling you, that's how I got my house clean the last like 6 months. There's like 13 of those books or something.
Well, mine only has the first one. I'm going to have to break down and buy the rest, I think, buy another one.
I found all of them on my library app, by the way. So,
oh, okay. I'll check it out
there. And she also has a new series called The Vampire Book Club, which I'm reading now or listening to now. There's only 3 books in that series, though. But they're just like so simple and like interesting and fun. And they're not like great literature. They're awesome.
They're not groundbreaking. Yeah.
No. But they're just fun. Like, you know, when you just need something light to get you through. Yeah. Kind of like our books today, I felt like.
Mine they are. Kind of should fun. We jump into them? I like what you said. What can we bite into our books?
Oh, is it time? Yeah. Is it time to bite into our books? I had to get in my cringy dad joke in honor of Father's Day. So yeah, let's bite into our books. Let's get started. Welcome to the Tulip Mama's Book Chat. Today, we're sharing 2 fun foodie reads for the middle schoolers in your life. Do you want to get started, Margie?
I would love to. So I read a really interesting book. So here's my complaint to every middle grade writer out there. Boys like to cook. Can we bring a few boys back? I'm not asking for a ton. So when I was looking for a book, I was like, I really want a boy book because my boys cook.
Right.
So I wanted a main character. And so I kind of like dug and I couldn't find, I found a couple that I'd already read. So I was like, oh, I found this one. And I'm like, okay, let's try this one. This was a really wonderful book. And it was so much more than what I was expecting, because it was so much about baking, but it was so much about like struggling through the death of a parent. And being an ESL kid all in one. So this is called Pie in the Sky and it's by Remy Lai. Remy Lai is an Indonesian-born author, illustrator, and she actually is based in Australia. So the book is set in Australia. It is in English, obviously, but it has this really great flair. You could be an American kid and get every aspect of this because there's not that much difference. You know what I mean? Like reading a book that's set in Australia versus a book that's set in America. It's like reading one set in England.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, I read so many British books, but honestly, I follow a lot of Australian authors too.
Yeah. These are really fun. She's got a lot of books out. I would direct you to her website, which is remlai.com. Her name is Remy Lai, but that is remlai.com. It's a good resource for all of her books because some of them are a little bit more difficult to get than others in the US. This one I got from my library. Actually, I was able to get it from my library, but it's not always readily available on a lot of the bookshops. Anyway, I just want to put that out there. Also, this book has a really wonderful discussion guide on her website too, which I think this book has a lot of use for a lot of people, and that discussion guide could come in really handy. So Pie in the Sky was voted, it came out in 2019. It was voted the Parents Magazine Best Kids Book of the Year, the New York Public Library Best Book of the Year, wow, NPR Best Kids Book of the Year, Horn Book Best Book of the Year, and a Kirkus Best Book of the Year. And I've never seen this.
I've never seen it.
I've never heard of this. It's got a really great cover. She's, like I said, she's an author illustrator, and it's considered a graphic hybrid. Basically, it just means that there are a lot of illustrations within the book, and there are parts where the chapter might have 3 pages of text and then like 2 pages of illustrations.
So are the illustrations integrated in the story where you have to read them as part of the story?
Yes, definitely. It's kind of like got that Wimpy Kid feel, but a little bit less illustration than that. So it's kind of that Wimpy Kid-ish vibe. So this is a story of Jiang Wen, and Jiang Wen and his brother Yang Hao, we start off and they're on the plane on their way to Australia with their mother. And their mother is a baker, a pastry chef, and she just got a new job in a popular bakery. Their father and their mother and their grandparents all had a family cake shop. But she's decided to take the boys and leave to build her skills in a new country. And that was her dream, to kind of move on from Southeast Asia. So mom knows English. Mom learned English in pastry school. And Yang Hao, he's 9. And he's learning English pretty fast because he's really outgoing and he's little. And he is trying it all the time. He's trying really hard to learn English. But Jing Wen has no English whatsoever and no interest in getting any before he went, and no interest in learning it once he gets there. He is a very stubborn 12-year-old and not the most likable main character. But that's okay, because he has a good reason to not be so likable. The best thing about this is that when the plane touches down, he keeps making reference to the fact that he's landed on Mars and everyone's speaking Martian. And the illustrations are like of these crazy monsters, these crazy Martian aliens. And then the word bubbles are like symbols that don't make any sense. It really does speak to what it feels like to be in a country where you don't know the language, especially as a kid. And it so well depicts like what an ESL kid goes through. Sort of that landing and just being like, I'm not going to do this. I don't care. Everyone's speaking a language. I'm not part of this. I don't care. So mom works a lot and they get settled in, and mom's working a lot. And he's in charge of his little brother, Yang Hao. Yang Hao is very ordinary and you can't help but love him. He is a kind of a turd and you love him. Here's the thing that's weird though. The plan originally 2 years ago, the plan was to move to Australia as a family of 4. And then his father was killed in a car accident. So that's why everything went on hold. And Jing Wen decided that, well, now that his father was dead and he was the one who dreamed of moving to Australia and opening the bakery called Pie in the Sky, that this was all off. So then when his mother decided 2 years later, she got the job and she said, we're going to go do this. He's been angry ever since. So he's very, very angry at his mother. He's angry at about everything, because this was not the plan. This was dad's dream. We do not have to live this. I remember very, very clearly feeling the same way. Very much so. Like, that's not something as a kid when my dad died, like, that's it. That was his. We're not going to do that. You leave that with him. We have to make new plans and new dreams, and being really upset about things that didn't sort of follow that idea. So one night, Jing Wen is really lonely, and they have certain rules. Like, their mother works from 4:30 at night, or 4:30 in the afternoon to 3:30 in the morning. The rules are very strict. Like, they have to eat dinner at this time. They have to do homework at this time. They have to be bathed and in bed by this time. She calls to check in on them. There's a nice old chubby lady with a cat across the hallway that will kind of check in on them if they need it. Whatever they do, they are not allowed to use the oven. Well, Jing Wen, of course, you know, doesn't listen to that so well. So he realizes one night, because Yang Hao is just like whining. He wants cake because literally these boys grew up in a cake shop. So they always had cake to eat. So he's like, I want cake. So Yang Wen decides to make a cake. Jing Wen and his father used to make cakes every Sunday. And he would tell him, his father would say, these are for the pie in the sky bakery. These are the pie in the sky cakes. And they were really fancy cakes and not the kind of cakes that they made in the shop. So they would make these like tiramisu, a chocolate torte, things like that. So Jing Wen makes a list and he says, you know what? We're going to make every pie in the sky cake while mom is at work. And they start to spend their allowance on supplies on their way home. And they almost get caught the first night because she walks in the next morning. And he said they made a Nutella cake. And he said, you have to eat the entire cake because there can be no evidence. So these two little boys are eating an entire cake that they've made in the evening all before they go to bed. And mom walks in and she's like, why does the house smell like chocolate cake? And so they realize, Jing Wen starts to make all these rules. You can't, you know, the windows have to be open. It has to be this. And so he also starts making the cakes like half size or three quarter size or something. So they have to eat them. But even that is still too much, because every night he's making one of these grand cakes, because when he's making the cake, he feels his father. He feels connected to his father. The loneliness leaves and he kind of gets into this world of magical thinking that if he can make all the pie in the sky cakes, then everything will be okay. If he does this for his father and sort of like makes his father's dream come true once, then everything in Australia will get better, because he can't understand anything at school. He's not picking up English the way his brother is. He's not making friends. And when he makes a friend, he misunderstands what they say. So he gets really upset with them because he thinks they're talking about him being slow, when that's never was the case at all. Because of his broken English, he's missing things. Again, something that's so true of ESL kids. Like, you just catch part of it and you assume that they're talking about you. You cut the one word that you understood and had nothing to do with anything else. Long story short, things, of course, can only go on for so long before mom figures things out. And that's when everything sort of explodes and we kind of get to the why Jing Wen is so angry at his mother and how he's so angry and what they need to do to kind of get back on track. It's such a great story. He does become a little bit more likable, but you feel for him. You understand, like, he was just 10 years old when his father died. And now he's only 12 and he's basically in charge of raising a 9-year-old who is much like my 9-year-old, a little bit crazy and a lot outspoken. So it's really hard. And he has to learn English at the same time. And he's living in a world where now his brother has to translate everything for him. What could be more humiliating than asking your little brother to help you with everything? So it's such a good book. It is such a good book for kids that have lost a parent. It was such a good book for any kid that's been a Martian, like feels like that Martian. There's so many uses. Like, every library, every school library needs to have this book, but every school counselor needs to read this book, because Remy Lai is a brilliant, she just tells a brilliant story. It's very lower middle grade too. I could give this to my younger one and he would have no problem kind of getting the gist of everything. But I think that to have a better understanding of your ESL kids and the what they're going through, you should read this book, because it's right on the money. To have a better idea of like how the stages of grief go on for a kid for so long and how that manifests into anger and how that manifests into frustration. It's so clear. And she's done such a great job with it. So I just think that it's an asset to any teacher, school counselor, ESL teacher for sure. And I think that it needs to be, it's gotten all these awards, but no one's seen it. So I think that we need to put it out there. So everyone should go read Pie in the Sky by Remy Lai. It was fabulous. And it was not at all what I was expecting. So I think way better than I was expecting. So
yay.
What about you?
Okay. Well, let's see if I can top that. I don't know. I read The Takeout by Tracy Badua. It just came out in May of this year. So 2023. Nice. Yeah. Brand new book. The author, Tracy Badua, she's a Filipino-American lawyer and author. As her bio states, she writes books about young people with sunny hearts in a sometimes stormy world.
Oh, nice.
I know. I love that. And I feel like that is just the best description I could think of for the main character of The Takeout. Her name is Mila, and she's a Filipino-American girl who recently moved to Coral Beach, where everyone is super samey in the small town, and she's struggling to fit in.
Nice.
Boy, as a 53-year-old white woman in the Midwest, I could totally relate to this. I know it sounds insane, but like that whole samey thing is a struggle for a lot of people. Yeah. And I just felt Mila in my heart. It was so great. So she's really struggling to fit in. And she feels like she needs to hide part of herself in order to fit in with all these girls that are super samey. And she does have like a group of girls that she hangs out with. So it's not like she's completely on the outside, but she feels like in order to be with them, she needs to hide part of herself. The only place she really feels like she can be herself is at her dad's Filipino Indian food truck. And it's called The Banana Leaf. Oh my gosh, it's adorable. And she helps kind of invent new recipes. It's a Filipino Indian like mashup.
Nice.
Yeah. Her dad obviously is the Filipino chef. And then he has a partner who is the Indian chef. And then they combine their dishes to make something new. Her dad left this big engineering job and her grandmother lives in this town. So they're living with her grandmother while they're trying to get this business off the ground. She has a sister, an older sister who's like in her, I think, early 20s, late teens, and a mom who are not with them in Coral Beach. Her sister stayed back in, I think they're from LA, because she was going to school and she decided to stay. And her mom had to go to the Philippines because her father is very elderly and she needed to go help him because they don't have a lot of extra money and they couldn't afford to hire someone to help him. So the mom is there. So Mila's also struggling with this because she feels really alone without her mom and her older sister, yeah, who she's very close with. And her dad, of course, is really busy focusing on the business. But, you know, she does get to spend time there and work in the truck with him. So it's not like she's being neglected completely or anything like that. But anyway, so that's kind of what's happening. Then these twin celebrity chefs, Chip and Chaz Darlington.
That tracks.
Yeah, you can picture them perfectly just from their names. They come to town with the promise of boosting local tourism economy with a new restaurant. So everybody in town's super excited that they're coming and they've been visiting different places around town to support the town. And it's this huge thing. And Mila loves them. They're her heroes. She can't wait to meet them. And they get an invitation to the soft opening of the restaurant. A lot of the small business owners in the area did. So she's super excited to go. And they're sitting down and the dishes start to come out. And they are the exact recipes from her family food truck.
They stole them.
They stole the recipes. And her dad is and his business partner try to like spin it where, you know, like try not to overreact because they're aware that everyone in this town is super excited about this. So they downplay it. And Mila is just outraged, of course. Like, she can't believe this is happening. It's like blatant. And they even down to like a lassie that she invented, everything was exactly the same. And it matched up to like a menu they had like 2 weeks ago. And she doesn't understand why her dad's not fighting it. And so she gets super frustrated. And at the same time, this boy, AJ, who's her dad's business partner's son, is visiting. Or nephew. I'm sorry. He's the nephew and he's visiting for the summer. And so she and AJ sort of team up to figure out what happened. And doing some research, they found out that these brothers have done this to another restaurant.
Oh.
Where it pretty much ruined the restaurant's business. So they went and visited them and got them to talk about it a little bit. So they know they're on to something, but all their little efforts to try to expose them sort of fail. And then Mila is sort of forced into dabbling into Filipino folk healing magic, which she's never really embraced before. Her sister is really into it. Her sister left her with some vials of like different little magical potions. And she decides to use one to get these brothers to expose themselves for the frauds that they are. And it's kind of fun. So it sort of dabbles in magical realism, but that's really the story feels more, it's over the top, but it's more realistic fiction. But then it sort of dabbles in this Filipino folk healing stuff, which is so fascinating. I thought it was really cool addition to the story. But the story is super lighthearted. I would say definitely lower middle grade. It reminds me of those front desk stories. It just has that kind of vibe, you know, because it's so lighthearted and fun, but it also really touches on some big themes like cultural appropriation is a big one. And also, you know, challenges of fitting in while you're still also trying to stay connected to your own culture.
Right.
And the perseverance of standing up in the face of adversity, because obviously these two successful celebrity business owners no one's really questioning what they're doing. And so it was really hard to kind of go up David and Goliath kind of story.
Right.
Yeah. But I also think like all readers would really enjoy the information about like Filipino culture and the descriptions of the food was just so much fun. And the relationship, I really like the relationship between Mila and AJ, because as she feels like she's sort of losing touch with her girls that are friends in the town, the two of them develop a pretty strong friendship that she's not even kind of aware of. I thought that was really neat. And he seems pretty confident in who he is. So it was really interesting relationship. And also she starts to realize that maybe some of her same-sea friends are more open to unique things than she thought they were. So that was kind of cool too. So anyway, I just really enjoyed it. Like I said, it was like a fun, lighthearted read, even though it had these big themes in it, but it was not a super long book, like 240 pages. So it was fun. Definitely lower middle grade, I would say. And the food descriptions, yum. I mean, come on.
Well, all of them. That was the same with the cakes. I was like, oh, this is not helping me not want cake. And then the kid's like licking the Nutella jar. And I'm like, same girl, same. I mean, not good if you're trying to stay on the healthy side of things.
That's funny. Yeah, I know. That's a bad thing about reading foodie books.
It right?
Makes you hungry the whole time.
We had two winners then. We definitely had two winner chicken dinners.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, they're, again, some fun kind of summer reads, not super heavy. But yet also really interesting. I don't know. I love the way middle grade authors especially can make a lighthearted story that covers like these really intense themes, where if you were just talking about those themes, it would be like, oh my gosh, this is a lot to deal with. But right. in these stories, it's very manageable and makes it very palatable.
Well, and if you put it with food, obviously it makes it easier. Palatable. See what you just did there?
Yep. Another cringy dad food joke. There we go. All right. Well, I guess that wraps up our book chat with some yummy choices. So we'll take a quick break and come back with our pick six. We'll be talking about more middle grade book recommendations, this time with LGBTQ themes in honor of Pride Month.
Welcome back. Happy Pride. We've spoken out a lot about the importance of representation in books, and we usually have our Uncle Johnny on to kind of talk about LGBTQIA+ characters and books during this time of year. And we couldn't quite work it out into our schedule this time around, but we are going to give you some from our perspective anyway. I think these books are really important right now because this is a time when children are being threatened for what some consider different or wrong, or we're allies like us are being accused of being woke. Mm-hmm. So we want to give you some recommendations for books that have LGBTQIA+ themes to them, characters in them, things like that. So do you want to start us off, Heather?
Sure. Yeah, this was kind of fun trying to find three books that I thought were really interesting. And I came across so many that it was kind of
hard. I know, narrowing it down was hard. Yeah,
I know. But of course, my first pick is a fellow Hoosier author. I always have to promote my Indiana authors.
Good.
Yeah. So the first pick is called Ellie Ingalls Saves Herself. And I love the cover because it says Ellie Ingalls saved the world and the world is crossed out and herself is written in, which I think is adorable. It's perfect. Like such a great idea. And that's by Leah Johnson. She's the author of You Should See Me in a Crown, which is a very well-known YA novel that won a bunch of awards. And she, like I said, is an Indiana author, and the book is set in Indiana, which I love. So Ellie Ingalls Saves Herself just came out in May of 2023. I got a lot of new ones for you this time around. The story is basically about a girl who really likes to live in the shadow. Ellie has a best friend, Abby, who's like bold and talented, and Ellie just thinks she's amazing. And Abby drags Ellie along for her never-ending quest to really make her mark on society. You know, she's just big and bold and lives large. Other people might think that was kind of bad living in her shadow, but Ellie really loves it because it's kind of like she gets to have these experiences, but she doesn't need to have the spotlight on her, right? I can relate to that sometimes. Like, you just kind of want to sit back and enjoy the bold person, you know, not implying you or anything, Margie, at all.
No, not at all.
But anyway, Like I said, she likes living in the shadows and she's a very huge lover of comic books. If she's got a comic book and Abby doing her thing, she's perfectly happy. But of course, you know, it's a middle grade story. So the story doesn't end there. I mean, it's kind of funny because most kids in middle grade stories start out uncomfortable in their skin and grow to be comfortable. This girl is starting out comfortable in her skin and grows to be uncomfortable. So it makes it kind of a unique story. So there is an earthquake in her town that's really unusual. And she wakes up the next day after the earthquake and she's got superhero powers.
Ooh, nice.
She can turn dead things back to life. So she tries to keep it a secret, but eventually, of course, it gets out. Someone took a video of her using her power and it goes viral, like things do in this world. And now she is in the spotlight. There's a celebrity or a pop star, sorry, who comes and wants her to use her powers on live TV, and there's paparazzi and all these things. So her world just explodes. So that's basically what the story is about. Ellie is also struggling with maybe having a crush on Abby. So there's all of that too that's happening in her life that she's dealing with in the middle of also becoming this superhero that everybody wants a piece of. So I actually started reading it. I haven't finished it, but it is so cute. Ellie is just adorable. Like, you instantly love her. I think, you know, by having the story start out with her being comfortable in her own skin, it really just draws you in. Like, you just adore her right away. That's Ellie Ingalls Saves Herself by Leah Johnson. And the next book I have, oh my gosh, this one I listened to and it is intense. It's called Too Bright to See by Kyle Lukoff. He's the author of lots of books. He had some picture books and stuff. This book is a little bit older. It came out in 2021 and it is a ghost story. I love ghost stories. It's a really short book too. It's only like 192 pages. This book was so intense. It's so gorgeously written. I was trying to think of stories that it made me think of, maybe a little bit along the lines of The Whispers by Greg Howard. That was the only thing I could kind of, it made me think of that a little bit. It's very different. The main character is 11-year-old Bug. Now, the only thing about this book is it's set right before middle school starts, but I feel like this is definitely for probably more 6th, 7th, 8th graders. I wouldn't say it's for 4th and 5th grade. It's short and they could read it, but it's so, the metaphors are like huge. The writing is so artistic. It's just gorgeous and concise, but it's also kind of intense. And the ghost story was intense. Like I said, I love ghost stories, so I was here for it, but this was kind of an intense book. It's the summer before middle school, and we've got an 11-year-old main character named Bug and her best friend, Myra. Myra thinks that they need to get prepared for middle school, right? They need to get their act together. She's starting to care more about the clothes she wears, about makeup, about boys. And Myra's reaching out to other girls their age and trying to kind of form like a group of friends before they start school. So they're ready to go. Bug is not sure about any of it. Bug is not interested in boys. Bug is not interested in any of this because she's dealing with the recent death of her uncle, who was a gay man and a drag queen. And he lived with Bug and her mother. So it's just the three of them in rural Vermont. So she's dealing with his death. She already was aware of ghosts, but they were sort of just like in her home, but not really interacting. She knew ghosts didn't interact. Well, now she's got a ghost that's interacting and she's not sure what's going on. And you're also through the whole story getting hints that there's personal things going on with Bug that she's also not addressing that might be tied to the ghosts trying to contact her. And she's pretty sure after a while that it's her uncle who's trying to contact her. The ghost slowly leads her to start to understand things about herself and basically that Bug is transgender. And really is cool. A boy in a girl's body. And the way it is handled, though, and especially the tie-in with the ghost is just, oh my gosh, so amazing. It is beautifully written. Just gorgeous book. Too Bright to See by Kyle Lukoff. That one's been out for a while. Short read. You know, if you're a teacher, you might want to read this over the summer just to see I feel like it's just a really insightful story about what it must feel like to be transgender. Because the dysphoria and the tie-in with ghosts and stuff is just genius. So amazing. I really felt it. You felt like you were inside that whole experience of what it must be like. So it was amazing. So that was, I'm probably taking too long talking about these books, but they're so good. So that's Too Right to See by Kyle Lukoff. Okay. My third pick, The Insiders by Mark Oshiro. I have not read this book yet. This one came out in 2021, so it's a little bit older. It's about Hector Munoz, who moves from San Francisco, where he's openly gay and it's no big deal, to a small town in California where now it's a big deal. And this is a magic story.
I saw this book. It looks really good.
Yeah, he stumbled across a room that it's a magical room that connects him with two friends from other places in the country who also need like a safe space where they're being bullied for being who they are. So that's The Insiders by Mark Oshiro. So my three picks, I'll just repeat really fast. Ellie Ingalls Saves Herself by Leah Johnson, Too Bright to See by Kyle Lukoff, and The Insiders by Mark Oshiro. All sound amazing.
They all do look good. They really do. There's so many good ones out there to choose from.
Yes.
So many to choose from. All right. Well, I chose three that I have not yet read, but they both are on my to-be-read list now. Yeah. The first one is called Ring of Solomon by Aidan Polidori. And The Ring of Solomon is the beginning of a series, and it was released in February of this year, the first one. It's an action-packed middle-grade novel based on Jewish mythology.
Ooh, how fun.
A gay main character. So I think it's really fantastic. It follows a young queer boy, his best friend, their newfound ally, and his parents are also a large part of this, and they're all key to saving the world. Basically, it's an adventure plot, like a hero's quest sort of thing, which we both love. The recommendations are, if you like Rick Riordan, you're going to love this. So if you're looking for something a little shorter than Rick Riordan, I just think it's really cool that it's based in Jewish mythology, because you never find that. I think it's something interesting. Mm-hmm. So Zach and his sister accidentally stumble upon a magical ring, and he has no idea what he's in for, but he rises to the challenge with agility and determination. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really
agility.
Great.
I like
that's awesome. It's Ring of Solomon by Aidan Polidori. The next one spoke to me. It reminded me of some dear friends. It's called Glitter Boy by Ian Eagleton. It came out also in February 2023, and it's about 11-year-old James, and he loves dancing and poetry, and of course Mariah Carey. Oh. Because that's what the young gays love. I love that. I'm like, Mariah Carey. And then my friend John was like, yeah, we're old. So that's the new Madonna for them. His teacher, Mr. Hamilton, is getting married to his boyfriend, and James is going to be part of the wedding as part of a choir performance, like a flash mob sort of thing. James's father is very uncomfortable with the whole thing, though, and he doesn't like any of this, and he doesn't like to mention any mention of Mr. Hamilton or James's dancing or the way that he talks or the way that he talks about his new friend Joel. Meanwhile, a different boy has been harassing James at school, calling him gay, bullying him, and everything else. And James can find relief with Nan, his, of course, grandma. But she's having falls, and James is afraid that she's going to get sent to the care home soon. So the secrets are building up, and James is starting to lose his spark. So he has to find a way to kind of let the truth come out, and can he handle it? So that's called Glitter Boy by Ian Eagleton. That looks fantastic. And then the last one, I picked a book in verse. This one's for a little bit older kids, sort of upper middle grade. And it is The Song of Us by Kate Fussner. I love a book in verse. You love a book in verse. You know how we love mm-hmm. those. So this is a retelling, a queer middle grade novel in verse, retelling of Orpheus and Eurydice, the great Greek tragedy. Do you know this one?
I was just trying to think of that. I'm like, it's been forever since I read that.
I love all the Orpheus. It's pretty interesting. So this one, I'm not as familiar with this one. I remember vaguely reading it in graduate school. It's been a long time. But anyway, love at first sight is not a myth, according to the seventh graders, Olivia and Eden. Get it? Orpheus and Eurydice.
Yeah, got it.
Olivia and Eden. See how this works there? It's fate. And Olivia is a poet, and Eden thinks she wants to be a musician one day, but for now she's just the new girl. And then Eden shows up to poetry club and everything changes. Eden isn't out, but Olivia is, and she has rules. So don't call, don't tell her friends, don't let anyone know that they're together. But when jealousy creeps in, it's Olivia's words that push Eden away. And Eden sets out to find herself. Olivia begins a journey to kind of get Eden back through poetry, but both are just sort of trying to figure out how their words can either bring them together or they can sort of force them apart forever. It sounds a little heavier. So I think that should probably more in the older category, where the other two, especially Ring of Solomon and Glitter Boy, seem like they could be any type of middle grade, lower middle grade, all the way up. Those are my three. I picked Ring of Solomon by Aidan Polidori, Glitter Boy by Ian Eagleton. That's a hard one to say. And The Song of Us by Kate Fussner. Kate Fussner has a lot. We read some of her other stuff. She's been a friend of the pod, if you will. That was it. I think we got some great ones.
Awesome. And we'll list those in the show notes. So if you want to check any of those out, you can find them there. That wraps up this episode of Two Lit Mamas Podcast. Margie, what's on deck for our next episode?
Well, we're going to take a well-deserved hiatus for the month of July because some of us, the soccer mom here, needs to get her head on straight and just needs to relax on the beach for a little bit. So we're going to take a little break, a little summer vacation, if you will. But we'll be back at the very beginning of August with, of course, our MPH, Falling Out of Time by Margaret Peterson Haddix, her new one. I was even telling my younger son about, do you remember that book, Running Out of Time? I'm like, this is her new one. He's like, well, we have to read this.
Of course. So yeah. I was thinking that. I'll try to read Running Out of Time before I read Falling Out of Time, even though I've already started Falling Out of Time. But now I kind of want to go back and read the other one because it references it so much that I feel like you have to do both. It'll be fine.
Oh, good. Yeah. I read it just a couple of years ago when I was homeschooling my oldest, but I'm going to read it with the little one because he didn't remember it.
Yeah. I can't wait.
So that's what we're doing. Yeah. We're going to take a little time off, but we'll be back in August. I know you'll miss us, but just drink some Franzia and you'll think we're here again.
Yeah, just listen to some old episodes.
There you go.
And remember, if you like what you've heard on the Two Lit Mamas podcast, since you have a little bit of extra time next month, you won't be listening to us, you could write us a review, which would be awesome because then more teachers and parents can find us and know what to recommend to their kids. You know how hard it is to figure that part out. So if you share us with your friends and write a review, we'll love you forever.
But if it's bad, we will not invite you to our Franzia box wine party. So just saying.
And you want to come to that because you know that would be
right?
Fun. I want to go to that. And if you want to join us twice a month for Kidlit discussions, please subscribe to the Two Lit Mamas podcast through any of the places you get your podcasts.
And if you want to find out what's happening in our world, you can follow us on TWO Two Lit Mamas on Instagram, TWO Two Lit Mamas on Facebook, and on our website, www.twolitmamas.com. Have a wonderful summer vacation.
Yes.
We'll see you in August. Bye.
Bye.